Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle ready-to-drink coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
The thing that I just find interesting.
Ron, let me finish.
All these guys have said.
Here's the fact.
And I appreciate a lot of the things they're saying.
Nikki Haley.
I'm the only one up here who's gotten in the big fights and has delivered big victories for the people of Florida. And that's what it's all about. You can always talk, but when it gets hot in there, when they're shooting arrows at you, are you going to be stand up for parents' rights, keep the state free? Are you going to be able to do all those things? And in the state of Florida, because of our success, the Democratic Party lies in ruins. We have won the big fights. We have turned our state into a Republican state. People respond to leadership. I've done it while others have talked about it.
That was a big takeaway last night during the second Republican debate. I watched it so you didn't have to.
Wait, I didn't have to?
Yeah, I know. But if you, but there were a lot of people who joined up on the thread. I couldn't even finish the word with a thread. Blah. It was kind of a late night. Welcome to the show. Happy Thursday to you. I had to double check because it feels kind of like a Wednesday. I feel like, I don't know. It feels like a Wednesday to me. So another year around the sun for me today. So the second GOP debate, because we got, let me just tell you, we got a kind of a busy news day today because it's the first hearing for the impeachment inquiry. I want to be careful in how I say that because it's not like the impeachment trial. The Senate takes that out. This is merely the hearing for this. And they're presenting evidence, et cetera, et cetera. So we're going to have some highlights from that. It's been interesting thus far. So just to start with the debate, we're going to kind of bounce back and forth between some of the stuff and hit some other newsworthy things as well for you. Because like I said, it's kind of, there's a lot to sort of juggle today. And I don't want to overwhelm you as we roll into the weekend here. So the debate last night was one of the dumbest debates I've seen. I think that's pretty safe to say. I think it was one of the dumbest debates that I have seen. And not just because of the candidates. I came up with a piece last night. I had the best and the worst. And I thought that the worst person or who did the worst last night was actually Nikki Haley. And I thought that she did well the last debate because she kind of kept it cool, right? She kept it cool. She didn't really get into like the mud with people, right? She just kind of was like the mom of the bunch. At least that's how she, I felt like that's how she was trying to project herself. But I thought, I'm looking at all my notes, I didn't think that she did well last night at all because she went from cool and quick surgical hits the first debate to going absolutely wild and being downright bitchy. And I can say that, and it's not sexist. I absolutely reject this idea that you can't say a man or a woman is acting bitchy because, folks, it was like that last night. It was a little wild. And so I thought she was just fighting with everybody on the stage. She was the hammer and everybody was the nail. And she talked over everyone. She yelled. She just sounded bitchy. That's not sexist. It's truth. And the second biggest loser, I thought, was Mike Pence because he came across as befuddled, petty, and the lighting was horrible. The lighting for this debate was horrible because it made him look dry and patchy and sick. It was bad. I thought the third biggest loser was Tim Scott. I thought that was the third. And the inclusion of Univision was a waste of our time. It was an absolute waste of everyone's time because the questions from this moderators, the moderator begged the question, and they, I thought it was weird too that they unironically stuck the moderator from Univision with all of the questions about Hispanic issues. You know, kind of ironic. This is a little ironic, wouldn't it? I mean, case and point. And I'm going to get to this. This is one of the sound bites I have that I'm going to get to. Because she led everything with, you know, well, you know, you're all racist. I mean, that's basically what, you know, how she kind of led everything in. In the first debate, I don't think that anybody had a standout moment. But I absolutely do think there was a winner of the second debate. And I said so on X. I thought DeSantis won the debate. I thought DeSantis won the debate because he was able to shoot down bad faith arguments without seeming annoying, without seeming unpleasant. And he was able to actually incorporate and bring up his record of achievements. He was more aggressive this debate. I don't think that anybody, I don't think there was a big loser last debate, but I don't think that anybody had a standout moment last debate. And I don't think that anyone, I don't think DeSantis hurt himself in the first debate at all. But this debate, he was way more aggressive. He needed to be. He was way more aggressive, and he was able to bring up his record of accomplishments as governor and push back using that every single time, and that was good. And I said this, everybody on that stage, this is a two-person primary. It's done. Everybody else on that stage is auditioning for VP. They're auditioning to be a contributor for Fox, or they're auditioning for a publisher. I mean, hands to sky, that's what they're doing. So I wanted to put down, this was, I thought, the best clap back. And I thought this was a really, this is exactly what we're talking about when, you know, this was the moderator for Univision who was just absolutely ridiculous with this question. She took Kamala Harris's narrative about Black history and DeSantis shut her down. This was audio somebody 10. Listen.
Slaves developed skills which in some instances could be applied for their personal benefit. You have said slaves developed skills in spite of slavery, not because of it. But many are still hurt. For descendants of slaves, this is personal. What is your message to them?
So first of all, that's a hoax that was perpetrated by Kamala Harris. We are not going to be doing that. Second of all, that was written by descendants of slaves. These are great Black history scholars. So we need to stop playing these games. Here's the deal. Our country's education system is in decline because it's focused on indoctrination, denying parents' rights. Florida represents the revival of American education. We're ranked number one in the nation in education by U.S. News and World Report. My wife and I, we have a 6, 5, and 3-year-old. This is personal to us. We didn't just talk about universal school choice. We enacted universal school choice. We didn't just talk about Parents' Bill of Rights. We enacted the Parents' Bill of Rights. We eliminated critical race theory, and we now have American civics and the Constitution in our schools in a really big way, just like President Reagan asked for in his farewell address back in 1989. Florida is showing how it's done. We're standing with parents, and our kids are benefiting.
I think that was a great response. Tim Scott kept trying to interrupt. Of course, Tim Scott is the guy who I think he really showed how he is such a moderate last night with a number of things. And he was eager to use Kamala Harris's narrative, that false narrative. And the question of the one sentence out of entire unit where it was grotesquely misrepresented, number one. I mean, it was lied about. I mean, it's just shameful. And it was Kamala Harris that went and said it. It was despicable that any Republican, because they're so thirsty to launch themselves ahead of someone that they're competing against in a primary, would adopt and weaponize Marxist talking points to do so. That disqualifies you in my mind immediately. Tim Scott disqualified himself for my consideration in this primary the second he began adopting and weaponizing Marxist narratives for his own personal benefit. So he can talk all he wants to. He can show up on stage. He is, for the purposes of this primary, dead to me. Anyone who does that, I don't play. So that was, I thought, the best clapback moment. This was the biggest cringe. One of. There was one gross out moment. Chris Christie, you know he workshopped this. You know he workshopped this. Chris Christie decided he wanted to get involved in a giant, like, cringe-off, basically, I guess, and a cringe-off name-calling contest with Trump. This Guys, this made me cringe hard. Can you die of cringe? I almost did. Listen, audio soundbite four.
Not here tonight, not because of polls and not because of your indictments. You're not here tonight because you're afraid of being on the stage and defending your record. You're ducking these things. And let me tell you what's going to happen. You keep doing that, no one up here is going to call you Donald Trump anymore. We're going to call you Donald Duck.
Oh, my gosh. And the way he turned and, like, we're going to call you. It was like an SNL Mom Jeans skit. We're gonna call you Donald Duck. It was bad, dude. That was so bad. I died, and then I came back to life, and I went, what? It's still happening, and died again. It was that bad. It was so bad. Oh, my gosh. Stop it. It was so bad. Why did he do that? He is running to stick his foot up Trump's ass. That's the whole reason Chris Christie's running. Let's be honest. He is not running for any other reason. He's got a vendetta. He's got a vendetta. So there were some weird moments. I'm going to tell you, there was one moment, too, that was enraging. And I thought this was absolutely despicable. And so did my friend Ryan Petty, who's a Parkland dad. Mike Pence, I think, how did I label this one? I think I labeled this. This was one of the worst moments, the most shameful, pathetic jab. Mike Pence blamed DeSantis for the Parkland killer not getting the death penalty. This is audio soundbite 13. Now, remember, this happened when Rick Scott was governor. The governor isn't able to give out sentencing. But I have a follow-up to this. This was the despicable moment in the debate. Listen.
I'm going to go to the Congress of the United States, and we're going to pass a federal expedited death penalty for anyone involved in a mass shooting so that they will meet their fate in months, not years. It is unconscionable that the Parkland shooter, Ron, is actually going to spend the rest of his life behind bars in Florida. That's not justice. We have to mete out justice and send a message to these would-be killers that you are not going to live out your days behind bars. You're going to meet
justice. The ridiculous thing is that he was asked about Obamacare. And that was Mike Pence's answer about Obamacare. Now, here's the thing, that this is why this is so despicable. And my friend, like I said, Parkland dad Ryan Petty, he lost his beautiful daughter Elena in this tragedy. He erupted. He tweeted, quote, "Excuse me, Mike Pence, how dare you use the Parkland tragedy as a cheap political hit? You should apologize immediately. Governors don't pick juries and they don't force them to vote for justice." He said that DeSantis had stood with Parkland families from day one. Here's the thing. Not only was Pence's remark false, like maliciously false, which is weird for a guy who so loudly parades his faith around, but it's misguided. Because I remember Florida governor was so enraged over the Parkland killer's life sentencing. He was enraged. And he actually, as like a response to this, signed into law a bill that ends the requirement for a unanimous jury decision for death penalty sentences. So they ended that. That was their response to this. He was so enraged over that. That's what they did. And so for Pence to say that, I thought it was malicious. And don't sit here and, you know, wrap yourself in your faith and then make such an egregious lie. Don't do that. Don't do that. That was ridiculous. I have but that wasn't the biggest lie of the debate. It also wasn't the most naive answer or the stupidest question asked. And it wasn't the best kick in the neck or the best Freudian slip either. For 10 years, Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. And when I say only, trust me, they're the only one. Glenn and the team have been great supporters of the show, which is why I'm proud to partner with them. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major networks, which means you're getting the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the left. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending the message that you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, the Second Amendment, military veterans, and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Just visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT and get free activation when you use offer code Dana. Join me and make the switch today. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
Oh, yes. We have a lot more of the debate stuff coming up, too, because I have some... The grossest moment still hasn't happened. There was one. Okay, so first up, there was a fan. This was not even in Florida. This was a fan who was denied entry into a Phillies game because they tried to bring in an emotional support alligator. Excuse me, I thought this was America. Phillies fans... One fan was denied entry into the Citizens Bank Park Wednesday night. He tried to get in with his emotional support alligator. The Philadelphia Inquirer identified the guy as Joy Henney, and his alligator named Wally helps him battle depression. So according to the officials, the Philly official website, they say guide dogs, service animals in training are welcome. Other animals are prohibited. Dude, he's got this thing harnessed. It's like harnessed, and it's his emotional support gator. And Henny told the Inquirer that Wally has 109 followers on TikTok, so doesn't that make him legit? Likes to give hugs and is friendly. He said his doc wanted to put him on depression medicine. He hates taking medicine. He had Wally. And when I was around him, I was okay. And my doctor was like, okay, well, it works, so why not? So he said he rescues reptiles at home and at zoos and has them finds them homes at zoos and sanctuaries. And he's had Wally since 2015. He's not like a huge gator, but I get it. You know, like it's, you know, they're a little bit. I mean, can you train him? I mean, normally you have to have those animals certified, and the certification shows that they've gone through a level of training, meaning they're not going to just like attack and, you know. So I do think you got to be careful with that, because I've heard of stories, and I've actually known people who've had their actual animals attacked and bitten by animals that are emotional support animals, and they go after actual trained animals. So, you know, we can't. Yeah, I get it. I get it. But I do like that little gator. It's kind of funny. I love me some curly fries, like as much as the next person, but y'all don't need to be doing this stuff, okay? Like, we don't need this. This is in Texas at a Jack in the Box. It, like, went crazy because it was a drive-fry shooting. That's right. It happened, like, literally in 21, but now the surface is only, the footage has only just surfaced online and it's blowing up. And it apparently kicked off at a Jack in the Box near the Bush Intercontinental Airport in Houston. And then he realized, one guy realized his $12.99 combo meal did not have the curly fries. So we went back and began raising hell with the drive-thru employee, Alonia Fantasia Ford. According to Local 10, they would not give him the curly fries, and then all hell broke loose. Police were involved. We just don't need to be doing that, right? Like, just ask it politely. You know, you'll get it your way. Just don't be crazy. And coming up, I'm going to play for you an Aztec death whistle, because apparently the legend is that that's accompanied human sacrifices. I also think they should play it at every debate, which we got more of, and a lot of other stuff too. Stick with us. Does it seem like every time you turn around or open up your wallet, you're shocked at the changes that have directly impacted your life in just 2.5 years? There's something that you can do to protect the value of your hard-earned savings and retirement accounts. Contact the folks at American Hartford Gold and talk to them about your options in diversifying your assets. Empower yourself with opportunity. Hold on to the fruits of your hard work and protect your future. So do what I did and call the only precious metal dealers I trust, American Hartford Gold. Diversify your portfolio with physical gold and silver delivered right to your door or inside of your IRA or 401k. American Hartford Gold is the highest rated firm in the country with an A+ rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of satisfied clients. Call today and they'll give you up to $5,000 of free silver on your first qualifying order. Call American Hartford Gold today at 866-887-1188. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899. That's 866-887-1188 or text Dana to 998899.
Elevate your commute, workouts, or downtime with the Dana Show podcast. Unleash the power of knowledge at your fingertips by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Social media apps that we could have. And what you've got, I honestly, every time I hear you, I feel a little bit dumber for what you say. Because I can't believe TikTok situation. What they're doing.
Finish him.
This is my first thought. I was watching this debate, and no, I'm not even a Haley fan, but I was watching this debate, and I went back to, like, I'm like, Mortal Kombat was made for this. Not for the enjoyment of playing games, but because one day they knew that I was going to play this soundbite during a debate. That's why. That's the whole reason why. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. The bottom of this first hour. You know, I would have played a drinking game watching the debate, but I felt like I was already drunk without the benefit of alcohol, just listening to some of the answers from these candidates. You deserve better, listeners. You deserve better. You also deserve, like, decent moderation. I don't dislike the people that were up there, except for the Univision lady. The hell was that? Seriously, sidebar. Can we just, like, have a, you know, a side chat here? What was that about? Who's she? She gets up there and she's like, you guys are racist and you all probably hate brown people. So let me ask you this question. Everything was pretty much like that. Oh, you guys know it. It went through that filter. You guys want to hear the grossest, the worst overshare from the debate? Because this is really what it's all about. Yes, I could talk to you about policy and hits and misses, which I'll get to. But I had to hear this. And so you will, too. This, ladies and gentlemen, is audio soundbite 15,000.
My wife isn't a member of the teachers union, but I got to admit, I've been sleeping with a teacher for 38 years. And so full disclosure.
No, don't. That does not make you more relatable. Stop it. People are just like, well, I would hope you would sleep with your wife, you know, and don't tell us about it. That'd be great. Do and just no, never tell anybody. Just like that. That was one of the biggest. Now, the soundbite we came in with was the biggest kick in the neck of the night. That was Nikki Haley to Ramaswamy. Now, you guys know what I'm talking about, right? There's a point, maybe you're watching a movie, maybe you're watching a TV show, whatever. And there's someone that really deserves to be bullied. And you guys know I'm being honest, right? There's someone you know who totally deserves to be bullied. And when it happens, you're like, yeah, somebody got told, they got put in their place, Schadenfreude. But then, like, that energy keeps going from that same person. And you're like, okay, that's, you know, we like that moment, but don't keep it going. This is not, you can't ride this out. You just can't ride the bitch wave all the way through to the debate. You can't do that. Because then you make the guy look sympathetic. And I don't think that that's what Nikki Haley wanted to do, but I fear that she kind of did with some of his people, with some of Vivek Ramaswamy's people. She made him feel like, that made him look like he was the victim. I don't know. We have the best Freudian slip of the whole debate. Which one? Let me see. It's like we have a 50. Okay, here it is. Audio soundbite 3. This was the biggest Freudian slip of the debate. Listen.
Hunter Biden, millions of dollars, was a partner of yours as well. It's not nonsense.
So look, I want to respond. These are good people who are tainted by a broken system. And it's not the fault of anybody who's involved.
Some of us are tainted.
The bottom line is we need to be paid. Thank you for speaking while I'm interrupting.
You said by paper.
Oh, thank you for speaking while I'm interrupting. That's so great. That was the biggest Freudian slip of the night. He didn't really have a lot of policy. He would break into these platitudes. And I'm just so tired of that, right? He acts like he's Oliver Twist. You know, I grew up and I was eating gruel and I would go with my empty bowl. Stop it. Shush up. You were not. I can't deal with it. Everyone, it's like they have a pour off. You know, have you noticed that? I was poor. You weren't poorer. I was too. I was joking the week before when Mike Pence and Mitt Romney got into a fight. How does that work when you have two guys that wrap themselves in faith and they try to act like the biggest Christian on earth? I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but you guys know what I'm talking about, right? Like, you know, this was warned about with the Pharisees. And how do you fight like that? Like, I'm going to pray for you. No, I'm going to pray for you. Bless you. God bless you. Just like, how does that work? I don't know. He was weird. Pence was weird last night. Don't you think so? He was off-er than usual. And it didn't look well. You really did have a stark contrast, I think, between old and new. Like, you had the old guard GOP, which is like the Christies and the Pences. And then you had like the newer people which I would think is the DeSantis. And I'd throw Ramaswamy, I don't think he's a genuine Republican, but I would throw him in there. Oh, he's not. And then you have Doug Burgum, who only got on stage because I really think last night was an elaborate sting operation to help Eugene Levy get his eyebrows back. Because Doug Burgum, who's the governor of North Dakota, he has Eugene Levy's eyebrows. Google it, and you'll be like, I'll be dang, Dana's right. I think it was just an elaborate sting operation to get those back. Every now and then he would pipe up, and he wanted to be ungovernable from the beginning because the moderators would intercede and say, no, you need to speak in the time allotted. And Burgum's like, the hell I will. I mean, he just was not having it. It was fun. He was like a goose with a knife. He was not having it. It was, right? It's totally what he was like. Be ungovernable. So that was I kind of liked that when he got mad and just kept going. There were, it was weird. Did your mind change? Did anyone's mind actually change after last night's debate? I think we have to seriously now have the question or answer the question of we've got to really start winnowing down this field. We really do. But there were some, I want to get back to this. There were a couple of disingenuous, totally absolute, all-out lies last night, too. We went through the most shameful, pathetic jab, and that was Mike Pence. He had blamed Ron DeSantis for the Parkland killer, not getting the death penalty. And DeSantis was so enraged that he as a response to that sentencing, he signed a law bill that ended the requirement for unanimous jury decision for death penalty cases. The biggest lie, though, was Nikki Haley making up a story that the governor of Florida banned fracking. This was a huge epic miss by her campaign team. This was really dumb. She claimed that he himself banned fracking in Florida. Now, here's the problem with that. Floridians literally voted to ban offshore drilling. I love you, Florida, but I think that was dumb. It's not like, you know, you're going to be swimming around a platform. It's way out there. I don't know why they did it, but they did. Now, here's the question that I want to follow up with this. So Floridians literally voted to ban offshore drilling, and she tried to make a big stunt on this last night, and she accused DeSantis himself of literally, like, through executive order banning offshore drilling, that's not how it worked. And it, by the way, this was also supported by the Florida legislature, apparently. So Floridians wanted this. I think it's wrong, but states' rights and all, that's what they wanted to do. But if she thought that was so bad, the one person that she didn't criticize last night was Trump. And if she thought that was so bad, I was wondering why she's been so silent about the fact that he banned offshore drilling for Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina for a decade. Going back to this piece in Politico. This was September 8th of 2020. Quote, President Donald Trump announced on Tuesday a decade-long ban on oil drilling off the coast of Florida, Georgia, and South Carolina, a decision that surprised energy industry executives by reversing the administration's earlier pledges to open those waters to exploration. The move was announced at a campaign appearance in Jupiter, Florida. Why has she never brought that up? He was the one person that she did not criticize last night. Again, some people are trying out for VP, some people are trying out to be a contributor at Fox News, and some people are trying out for publishers. Now, be consistent. A, be accurate. If you're going to go at somebody for something, make sure that you're accurate. And she wasn't. Number two, make sure you're consistent, which she hasn't been. So I thought that was incredibly interesting. We had that as a headline when that happened, and I remember asking Florida, what are you doing? I don't know what the reasoning was, but that's the reasoning. Now, there were one of the big things that, and I think we have this. I thought this was the most naive moment of the night, and it actually kind of shocked me. I will admit, I was actually kind of shocked. Okay, audio soundbite 19. Let me set this up. So this was a question. There were no questions on COVID. There was no questions on the weaponization of the DOJ. Nothing like that. I think a lot of time was wasted. There was the question that was asked about Ukraine, and Haley got mad because, you know, Haley and Tim Scott and Chris Christie decided to get together and form one big old neocon Voltron up there on the debate stage. And this was a part of that. This was a part of the whole thing. So Tim Scott, as part of his answer, was trying to assure voters that, oh, don't worry about the amount of money that we're sending to Ukraine because they're going to pay it back. Audio soundbite 19. Listen to this.
And 90% of the resources that we send over to Ukraine is guaranteed. It's a loan. It is not 90% of the money that we send over there is loan. Well, we can talk about this, but at the end of the day, 90% of the money that we send over there is actually in the form of a loan. It's not actually not be paid by Ukraine. It's paid by the NATO, our NATO allies.
Oh, you know what? But so see, don't worry, guys. All of the billions that we're giving to Ukraine is totally going to be paid back. Kane, you don't need to get upset over it anymore. It's going to all be paid back. Tim Scott says so.
Oh, 90% of it, huh?
90% of it paid back. Do you feel so much better?
Well, I mean, the fact that it's false, no.
You don't believe that? You
don't believe
what he said there?
No, it's clearly a donation.
You don't think they're going to pay it back?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, all right.
How? I mean, if they could pay it back, they'd be paying it themselves right now.
Yeah. Is that your someone calling you?
Someone is calling me.
Is it Tim Scott telling you that it's going to be okay, that you don't need to worry about it because he's going to pay you back?
Tim Scott's office.
Is it Tim Scott's office?
Yeah, sorry.
Asking you, telling you, Kane, I told you last night at the debate, don't worry about it because we're going to pay it back.
How'd they get my number?
I'm telling you, they're listening to you all the time.
That is crazy.
They were making a giant neocon Voltron on stage. You don't think that they have the ability to listen in on our conversations live on air? Gosh.
Got to call him back.
We've got to be smarter than this. So that to me was, when he said that, my jaw dropped. Dude, my jaw straight up dropped off my face, like Beetlejuice style. Like it was, whew. We got a lot more. Also, we got some culture. There's this video, and I'm trying to figure out if it's a chick who says she's a dude or a dude who says he's a chick. But there was video in this school of this girl getting attacked by this trans student, and all these people just like videotaped it. Nobody did anything. So it's just sickening. Our culture is so bad. Oh, and by the way, there was more looting in Philly. And can someone answer me? Because I feel like I need to go check it out. I didn't know Lululemon had bread. And do you guys know that? Because we were told that's why the looting, AOC said that's why there was looting at these types of places, because hungry people wanted bread. Where can I get this Lululemon bread? We got to talk about this. It's so crazy. I didn't know that. Like, you know, I want to know. You guys know I love, like, food.
Don't let FOMO get the best of you. Stay in the loop and ahead of the curve by following Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
None of you have indicated that you're dropping out. So, which one of you on stage tonight should be voted off the island? Please use your marker to write your choice on the notepad in front of you. 15 seconds, starting now. Of the people on the stage, who should be?
I'll absolutely serious. With all due respect, I mean, we're here. Like, you know, we're happy to debate, but I think that that's disrespectful to my fellow competitors.
Nobody wants to participate.
Let's do some questions. Let's talk about the future of the country.
Good for DeSantis for being like, no, I'm not doing this, and for everybody else except Christie. Christie's like, no, hell, I'm going to write Trump's name on the notepad. Do you want to know what it is? It's Trump. That was what Christie did. That was really that. I just died when that was asked. Like, come on. Seriously. I get someone's like, what? We can't have levity. Yeah, you can have levity when we're not dying. Great. You can have levity when we have after we've covered all of the other topics that are incredibly important, like the open border, the weaponization of the Department of Justice and FBI. I mean, a million other issues. Sure, then we can have a little bit of levity, but we only have certain amount of time, and you're going to waste precious minutes where we could be talking about these other instances, like Fauci being invited into the CIA to sit here and talk about weaponizing him to fight what they called misinformation, which was just actual truth. When we have precious limited time, people want to know the real issues. They don't want to see this kind of stuff, right? Because if they want to watch like reality type TV, they'll watch reality type TV. But if they're going to take the time and invest their life, a couple of hours of their lives into watching a debate, then give them what they want. They want substantive discussion on policy issues, and they want to see real answers, not a clown show. So I'm good for them for not doing it, except for Christy. Gosh, that cracked me up. He's like, no, I'll do it. Because who was it? Stuart Varney was like, Mr. Governor Christie, I saw that you have written, it appeared as though you've written something on your notepad. And he's like, yeah, I did. I wrote Trump. Do you want to know what I wrote? It's Trump. That's, yeah, he was not, he was all about it. He was the only one who was like, yeah, I don't have any objection to this. But it did seem demeaning, you know, to everybody up there. So I'm glad that DeSantis pushed back and everyone else did as well. That was good. All right, so coming up in our second hour, we got some culture stuff we got to hit. We're also going to talk about this ongoing hearing. I thought Jonathan Turley was making some really good points earlier, over an hour ago with some of his testimony. We're going to discuss all of that. We have a lot still to hit. More fun stuff with the debate and also what to expect, because how is the bump going to work after this? It's going to have to be winnowed down for sure. And this really is a two-person primary anymore. It really is. Stick with us. I got some polling too. We got a lot more in store.
First, let me say I'm glad Vivek pulled out of his business deal in 2018 in China. That must have been about the time you decided to start voting in presidential elections. So okay. We're nice to have you participating in elections. Ooh. So
that was the one good moment that Mike Pence had last night, because he had a bad night. And I wrote about this. If you get the newsletter, you subscribers got all of this, and you got links to the clips, all of this stuff. It didn't go so well for him, Kane, last night. He seemed really petty. But that was his one bright moment. Welcome back to the program. It's my birthday, so you have to watch all of the simulcast today and listen to the entire show. If not, I'll know. Dana Lash here with you. Top of the second hour. I will somehow, just like Tim Scott will hat Kane, because and tell him that it's okay. Ukraine's going to pay us back, Kane.
Yeah.
He's going to call you again.
I'm waiting for it.
Yeah, just wait for it. I'll be like, Kane, don't worry. I can't do his voice. He's got like a drawl, kind of, like that South Carolina drawl that I cannot emulate no matter what. It's like soft Georgia drawl, right?
Right.
It is. Very, very different. All right, so this was a good point that I'm glad someone made it last night, even if it was Mike Pence, because I don't understand. You guys know that I don't dislike him as a person, I think. No, I'm being honest with you. Would I be buddies with him in school? I don't know, right? But I don't dislike him as a person. I just think that he is shady as all hell as a politician. I do, because he sits here. Didn't he go after TikTok, and then all of a sudden he started doing videos on TikTok? And then he, in this conversation about China's influence and the CCP's influence, he's like, we've got to stop this. But at the same time, I'm going to tell you why I'm going to defend making my videos on CCP-owned TikTok. Because literally TikTok is owned by the Communist Chinese Party. We don't just say this stuff like goofy talking point. It legit is. And that's why I am not on it. I will not go on it. You guys know I am so opposed to like CCP anything. I go out of my way not to even get made in China anything. I just won't have it if I can't get it otherwise. So when he was defending his making videos on TikTok, I think Haley called him out for it, and then Pence called him because Ramaswamy kept saying, oh, well, we've got to decouple from China, et cetera, et cetera. Here's why. And I wrote about this. I have two different spots on Substack. And I was part one, will the real Vivek please stand up? And then I also did, I had a part two. And I touched on this. I got into all of this stuff about his business dealings and his interests that he has in China. And this is from public information. I mean, this is all, it's all public. And I think it's completely fair to ask these questions simply because we, I think, are in this kind of cold war with China. And I think that if someone is benefiting financially from a geopolitical foe, I do think that will have an influence as to how they would act as the chief executive. And that's, I had asked this. This is what I wrote back. This was in part two. How can Ramaswamy be tough on China? Well, you know, he also, I mean, he's got Chinese investments. I and others have said that the Biden family business dealings with China has compromised them in national security. Wouldn't it be similarly so with Ramaswamy? My friend Mark Thiessen has a piece up where, get this, Ramaswamy was in business with the exact same CCP-linked family that paid millions to Hunter Biden. Now, his ROI, Roivant, return on investment, Roivant, the company that he has subsidiaries that are CCP, that are Chinese subsidiaries. He makes money off of that. Thus, he has these investments. And I'm so tired of the defense that I hear from people who say, well, he's in business. Of course he has this. That's not the question. If you're going to be in business and you're going to have CCP interests, then be in business and have CCP interests. If you're going to run for president of the United States and you want to talk tough on China, then you got to do that without your CCP money. This is not difficult to understand, even for his biggest stands. This is not a difficult concept. So I'm glad that someone called this out, even, like I said, even if it was Pence. But it is, we have a major problem with Chinese influence, CCP influence. And that's just all there is to it. That's the truth of it. And that's why I don't think, that's why I think Ramaswamy, to me, in my mind, you can't do both. I mean, we're questioning now the freedom that this administration has even to make decisions to best benefit the United States against China. And I mean, look at all this. I mean, they're just now starting to introduce, you know, this information now with regards to all of this impeachment hearing. And this is what the hearing is for, by the way. You're examining evidence without prejudging. You're examining the evidence that is being presented without prejudgment, and you're looking to see whether or not there is enough here to substantiate recommending charges, recommending this proceed to the Senate for a trial. And that's what's happening. Now, we know that there's a lot of connections out there. And combing through all of this and unfurling, you know, this giant, you know, this huge mess, this tangled web, you know, that's part of it. And so that's why I think that this comes into play. It was also weird. Did you notice, like, after the section where they were talking about China and then they went to break, there was a TikTok commercial immediately. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got some problems with that. Now, one of the people that was missing, someone who was missing from the debate last night was Trump. So this was kind of weird. He said he was going to meet with UAW, and it sort of was presented like that, but the UAW president went off on Trump, wasn't going to meet with him. So he went to a non-union shop, and they handed out union signs to random people, apparently. That's what everybody who is in media, even conservatives who were there traveling with the campaign, were reporting. So I don't know. I felt like, even though Biden only went out there, and I don't want to say this because I don't like Biden, I think Trump needs to do a little bit more. I feel like the leader so far in the Republican primary and the leader for Democrats are both old dudes campaigning out of their basements. You can get mad at me for saying it, but deep down, you know, I'm right. Really, I just feel like going there and just going, you know, for like an hour to a rally is just like, that's it. You're not going to go. I mean, if you were really serious, you would have people on the ground, which you don't. You would have. I mean, you only had the last that I had heard, like a couple of weeks ago. He only had a couple of people on the ground in Iowa. You need a whole outfit on the ground in these early states. And he doesn't. He does not have that campaign web built. That's a big red flag to me. You got to be serious about campaigning. You can't just think that it's going to come to you. You can't think that you're entitled to it because you won once and then lost one and then you should be able to win one again. A lot changes in 4 years. And the voters don't have to prove loyalty to you. You got to prove your loyalty to the voters. This is a republic. We literally shed blood and we kicked the ass of a lot of redcoats to not have to do this. And so you've got to prove yourself to voters every election cycle. I don't care who you are. This isn't a monarchy. If people want that, they can get their happy asses over to the UK. But that's not how we run things here in this republic. So that was I don't think that's going to work well. I know Chris Christie was like, I want to see him here, blah, blah, because you know he was going to do that. I mean, you know, Christie is, golly, he's, I think he would eat Trump if he could. Who was it? This is Audio Somebody 31. This was DeSantis speaking to that. And it was weird because no one else, like everyone else, immediately pivoted away from it, particularly Haley and Ramaswamy. Listen to this soundbite. This is from last night's debate.
So he owes it to the voters to defend his record, to defend the decisions he's made, and also to defend why is he running on the same program in 2016 that he did not actually implement. For example, draining the swamp. He didn't fire Christopher Wray. He didn't fire Anthony Fauci. He didn't do anything to clean house. Now, all of a sudden, he's going to slay the administrative state when he gave Fauci an award his last day in office.
I do think that should be debated. Why would anyone oppose it? People need to start realizing, and some of my Republican friends need to realize, I'm like trying to get you to prioritize you in this. So, you know, my friends who, you know, and everybody has, you know, some friends like this, you can't prioritize the politician over yourself. You are owed an explanation for things. No matter what the party affiliation is, I would like to know that. Like, why wasn't Ray fired? Why was Paul Ryan's budget basically accepted? I mean, that's true. Why was this, or Paul Ryan's tax plan? It was Paul Ryan's tax plan. Why did, I mean, he's such a big rhino, but we're taking his tax plan? Like, what is that? These are questions that I would like answers to. And these are new developments since the last time he went to debate that we're all talking about, because we are litigating this in the primary side. So I would like some discussion about this, right? How do you propose? I mean, clearly we need to do more with the southern border. I also want to know, you know, and I hear all candidates say this. Oh, well, you know, my first day in office, I'm going to do this, or I'm going to have this done in X amount of days, or I'm going to do this. Make sure you get me into office. When I hear someone who's already been in office say those things, my response is, why the hell didn't you do it the first time? These are legitimate questions that you as voter, you can ask them and still prefer him as your primary front runner. But you yourself deserve to have your questions answered. I feel like there has been this movement on the right to erode the sovereignty of the individual in this republic, and to think that we have to start treating Republican candidates like kings or queens. And we do not. My American DNA recoils into torches and pitchforks against that. I don't care who it is, even if it's somebody I like, even if it's DeSantis, I could not tolerate that. I just want people to realize that you are owed so much more. This is about you. This is not about a candidate. This is about you. And I'll tell you this too. It is not your job or mine to sell a candidate to you or to someone you know. That's a candidate's job to do that. That's part of the job. If you can't convince people to vote for you, you're not going to be able to convince world leaders to make deals with you. So that also needs to factor into consideration. We got a lot more on the way. We got headlines coming up, and I got to play you this video of this beatdown in this school. Now, I'm told, I'm trying to figure out, it's either a dude who says that he's a chick or a chick who says she's a dude. But either way, this girl was savagely, brutally beaten on camera by this person just attacked out of nowhere. So why do schools ignore this kind of stuff for the sake of identity politics? We're going to discuss this because that's what's happening. We're going to get into all of that and more.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Elon Musk has fired most of Twitter's election integrity team. He announced this yesterday. You know, the people that are supposed to maintain election integrity, and they haven't been doing that. He commented on a post from X News Daily noting that the head of the team was gone. And someone said, oh, you mean the election integrity team? Or no, he said, you mean the election integrity team that was undermining election integrity? Yeah, they're gone. Ooh, Democrats are going to be mad over that. You know that. I'm just like waiting. Extreme fear has returned to the U.S. stock market, according to MarketWatch. U.S. investors are in the grip of extreme fear for the first time in 6 months. They said that the index uses a handful of inputs, including the level of CBOE volatility, the index, the VIX index. That's the fear gauge. And it says it reflects a reading of extreme fear. Let's make sure we hype that up even more, 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 more. Right? That's really what it is. That's what they're doing. Let's be real. Let's see. Major retail CEOs are warning of dire shoplifting epidemics after the $112 billion in losses that are causing chains to take majorly drastic measures. We got more from Philly. They were like looting. More people were looting Philly last night. It's crazy. You know, because these department stores have bread. Did you guys know that? Yeah, I didn't know the Foot Lockers have bread, man. Would you want to get like bread from a Foot Locker? That'll be real. Would you? The National Retail Security Survey found that theft-related losses increased from $93.9 billion in 2021 to $112.1 billion in 2022. That's pretty, wow. This is becoming a huge thing in cities, especially like San Francisco. Costco says its one-ounce gold bars are selling out fast. This is one of their newest merchandise items. It's selling out within a matter of hours, said their CFO. 1 ounce gold bars. They said when they load them on the site, they're gone within a few hours, and we limit two per member. Members can purchase the 1 ounce bars of 24 karat gold from Rand Refinery for $1,949.99 or a 1 ounce bar from PAMP Suisse for $1,979.99. Both of them have a 4.9 star rating. They cannot be refunded or returned. A lot of people were trying to get them. There's a whole thread on Reddit about it. And you can earn 2% cash back on the purchase. Costco members can if they have an executive membership card, according to Reddit. Wow. All right, coming up, we got a crazy video for you. We have more on this hearing, the debate, so much. Stick with us.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This was not my idea. This was the idea of the crew.
That's true.
Kane and
it really was.
Steve and Juan.
So happy birthday to you. You are, just for people who know, because there's a lot of people asking online, how old is Dana? And I was like, she's 29 with several years of experience.
That's right. Yeah.
And I think that's the best answer to give.
Yeah.
To that.
I'm actually 45 today.
So, I didn't even expect you to say. I thought, I know I've known you for so long. There were years you would not tell people how old you were.
I have my grandma's line of thinking because my grandma would be like, are you really that ill-bred that you ask a woman her age? It's like me asking like if a man of a certain age, is that your hair or plugs? You know, it's like the same
right.
thing. I don't know. I've just never really, I'm just glad I'm not a millennial. So I'm, right. that's how I embrace that. I embrace the Gen X of it. So yeah. Oh, it's so thanks for birthday wishes.
Ever since you were then 30, you've been doing this show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's pretty amazing.
Well, was it? Or was it like, right? It was October 28th, 2008 was my first show, first radio program.
So then, 15 years.
It was on a Sunday night. And all the callers were, I had one woman who only wanted to talk to me about shoes. And then I had people who would call in to talk about aliens. And then George Norrie came on my show. Like, I was only on air for like a month, and he came on my show. And I thought that was really cool.
I remember those
days. George Norrie. Yeah, that was.
And even before, when you're just like a contributor, quote unquote.
Yeah.
I remember that too.
Yeah, that's wild stuff. Well, thank you guys for the
happy birthday. We do have a little gift and a card for you, and we'll do all that, I guess, off camera.
You guys don't have to do any of that. But it's totally cool you did. Thank you guys. No. So we've been, I'll tell you this. My husband was like, well, what do you want to do for your birthday? And I was like, I want you to make pizza because he makes really good pizza. And we have a pizza oven and I want to play video games. So basically I want to have like a 15-year-old boy's birthday. It's like, I don't really want to, you know, do anything. And I don't really, literally what I want to do. I am mad because I play Vermintide 2. I usually like first person shooter or horror games. That's, you know, it's just, and I grew up playing like Doom on PC or like when Nintendo first came out and then Sony PlayStation and all that stuff. So I don't like the 8-bit stuff, which the younger generations apparently seem to love. I don't know why. I want it to be as realistic looking as possible. So I tend to do like old school stuff. So it'll be like Back for Blood, or we'll play Killing Floor or Call of Duty or Vermintide 2. And my new class isn't going to be out until October 19th. So I really can't play any more of that until my new lady's out. So anyway, some of you are like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And that's okay. That's okay. And we play casually. However, you would die if you saw our setup, because it is hardcore. When I play, I want to play. There are certain things I get super bougie at. I get really bougie about my olive oil. I get really bougie about shoes. I'll get really bougie. There's certain things, right, that you just... other stuff, I don't care, right? I order black T-shirts off Amazon. The shirt I'm wearing right now, I ordered off of Amazon. I paid $13.99 for the shirt. I'm really, like, some stuff I don't care. But, like, cheese? Oh, no. I want the good brie. Like really good, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff. There's, like, a handful of things. My game setup? No. I got to be bougie. I want the bougie controller. I want everything to be, you know, this is how I am. So, I don't know. Everybody's got their quirks. It's mine. So, that's what I'm going to do. I literally want to eat pizza and play video games and have the birthday party of a 15-year-old boy.
What type of pizza?
It depends. Like, usually it's just like a pepperoni pizza, and I like crispy, thin, small pepperoni. I don't like giant pepperoni. I like the thin, not too spicy, crispy pepperoni, and then a good cheese and very simple sauce. So usually it's like the San Marzano crushed tomatoes and some, you know, some olive oil and just some spices, and that's keep it simple. That's usually how we roll. That's how we roll. And a good crust, a good yeasty crust. So, yeah.
I'll be coming by later.
Yeah, I was like ruined after we went to Italy. And so for people who don't know, and then I'm going to get into the meat and potato stuff, but it's my birthday, so you'll indulge me. So before we went to Italy, I was like, I actually want to, you know, I work out and, you know, I eat super clean. I eat ridiculously clean. Like, I don't have processed sugar. I don't have dairy. I don't do any of that except for brie every now and then. I eat a lot of protein, red meat, things like that, a lot of fish. And before we went to Italy, I was like, I'm gonna just because I'm anticipating eating like Chris Christie when I get to Italy, maybe I'll drop like 5 pounds so I can pack it on with pasta and gelato. And I really thought that I was gonna come back from Italy like, you know, not being able to button my pants, because I am not kidding you. I had like, because in Italy they eat a pastry. They're not breakfast people in Italy. They'll have an espresso and then they have like a sweet pastry and that's it. Like they'll have like a croissant and sometimes it'll be like a custard filled croissant or something like that. It's a sweet pastry and then just like, you know, your simple coffee. And then they have the pasta and then they have like the 5,000 hour dinner or things like that. So, you know, I would have like a totally out of, you know, the blue for me. I would have like a sweet for breakfast. I had my coffee and then I would eat gelato literally 3 times a day. I had pasta like twice. I mean, pasta. And that was like my main dish. Then I would have other dishes. You guys don't even understand how much I ate. I lost 10 pounds. Actually, technically, it was 11. And then when I was like, how did I lose weight eating this much and going to Italy? And you know how? It's because we walked. I'm not joking you. On average, 8 miles a day. We walked 8 miles a day. That was what my watch told me we were averaging. Because you walk everywhere. So I get it. I get it. That's why, you know, it makes sense to me. So I actually kind of evened out, right? Like I basically lost 5 pounds. Like I lost a little weight going over there and then I, you know, walked everywhere and then I came back and I'm like, my legs were just banging and, you know, and I ended up like, you know, minus 5 pounds total. So that was like great. It worked out well. But I legit ate like a dude. I ate like Chris Christie. I had gelato 3 times a day. I had, oh my gosh, piccata, chicken piccata, shrimp piccata. I had everything. I had the some amazing red, you know, pasta with red sauces and guanciale and all of it. Oh my gosh, so good. And, to say nothing of all the lemon delights I had. Jiminy Christmas, I had so much. So anyway, that's the story. That's the story. If you want to lose weight, go to Italy and eat everything and just walk. I'm not kidding you. One day we walked 12 miles. I didn't even know that. You don't even know you're walking that much. And then unless you have something that tracks it and you look down, you're like, holy cow, For real. Like, you do not realize how much you're walking because there's so much to look at. But literally, we walked, I think the least amount was like 7 miles one day. No joke. It's crazy. So there you go. Go to Italy to lose weight. It's worth it. All right. So let's get into some of this other stuff. And thank you all for the nice birthday wishes. I do appreciate it. That's right. I'm not a celebratory person. I like to celebrate other people, but I get real weird when everyone's like that. I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do. This is awkward. So, all right. Let's get into some of this other stuff. Do you know, by the way, did you see that this happened last night? Let me pull this up. They reinstated. Hold up. Did you see this? They reinstated the. I tweeted this and I gave myself a note and I lost it now because I was talking about food. The Senate dress code. Did you guys see this? Yeah. So the Senate. So now he can't wear his cargo shorts anymore, right? And hoodies. He's got to dress like an adult. True. John Fetterman. So they voted to reinstate that last night while all of this was going down. And there were a lot of Democrats. There were actually a handful of Democrats that supported this. This wasn't really like a partisan thing. Let me ask this question too. Do you think that it helps someone or hurts someone to make them easy in a lower expectation for themselves?
How did that work out with No Child Left Behind?
Exactly. I mean, if you really want, my point is that if people really wanted to help Fetterman, or if they thought that this was going to be good for him, wouldn't you help him and encourage him to, okay, well, let's put your suit on. Nothing's preventing you from putting your suit on. We'll help you. Like, wouldn't you encourage someone to, yeah.
You feel better. The dude obviously has emotional issues.
And if he has depression, I mean, there's studies like outward appearance actually can help people with that. That mood, not saying that you gotta, you know, just like dressing nice and grooming and, you know, you know, all of that, like pressed clothes, clean clothes, things like that. I just think that we would want to help the guy look his best. That's ultimately, I know there's a lot of jokes made about it, but I was thinking about this last night when I saw that. Is that not kind of the heart of the problem with the approach on left versus right? There was a quote when my kids were little. I homeschooled them because, I mean, I got married so young. When our kids were little, we homeschooled, and I put up quotes all over the house of the founding fathers. And there was one from Ben Franklin that he talked about how not to make the poor easy and being poor. And I always thought that was such a good quote. He's like, the quote is this. I am for doing good to the poor, but I think the best way of doing good to the poor is not making them easy in poverty, but leading them out of it. And I thought that was such a great quote. I mean, it goes on. He goes, I observed the more public provisions were made for the poor, the less they provided for themselves. And of course, they became poorer. And on the contrary, less was done for them, the more they did for themselves, you know, et cetera, and became richer. But I remember I'm for doing good to the poor, but I think the best way of doing good to the poor is not making them easy in poverty, but leading them out of it. And I apply that to this and almost every single policy aspect between the right and the left, because the left's response is to make someone easier in a lowered expectation, as opposed to providing the opportunity to get out of it. And that's ultimately the difference between, I think, the right and the left. I think that's really evident when you remove the economics out of it. I think that's super evident with like this Fetterman situation. You know, if you think that the guy really is, you know, needs help, why are you making him easy in a lowered expectation for himself instead of walking with him or leading him out to something, you know, something better, you know, having him presenting himself nicely and being able to, you know, I look at it like this. To a certain extent, I think that he tries to cosplay as the everyman, and I think that's how this started. But I don't know if I can, with 100% confidence, say that that's how this still is. In the very beginning, I do think, like I said, he cosplayed as the everyman, and I found it offensive because, you know, I grew up super poor, and my family grew up Ozark poor. And even the poorest members of my family could still put on a nice clean button-down shirt, and they could put on nice boots and their good jeans and go to church and still look presentable. They could you know, put on their best clothes and, you know, and be out in public at, you know, if it was at a wedding or something like that. That where your status does not determine how you present yourself. Your economic status does not determine how you present yourself. And I felt like that he lost that in his cosplay as the everyman. And that's why I found it so offensive. And I think a lot of other people did too. Now, though, I think in some respect, especially because he does seem like Kane said, he's got like an emotional issue. It sort of seemed like he's resigned himself to, well, I guess I'm the slob of the Senate. I don't know how you can call yourself a compassionate person and want to make someone easy in that. Do you know what I mean? I don't know how you can call yourself somebody with heart and not want to lead someone to say, no, you looked really nice when you were in your suit. Let's get you in your suit again. Cause you know, you look, because you know that at some point he's judging himself by everybody else that's showing up there. I'm not trying to sound like a bleeding heart moron, but I do think that's how it started, but I think it's changed a little bit. And ultimately, that's, you know, also, I think it really highlights the difference between the right and left in this stuff. The left chooses the path of least resistance, not out of compassion, but because they don't want to be bothered. Well, let's just lower the expectations. You know, like with the requirements for reading and math in California, let's just lower the requirements instead of leading kids to meet the same standards as everybody else. Well, let's just change the dress code in the Senate. Let him wear his shorts and look like a slob instead of encouraging him and leading him to dress as you know he can and probably wants to. There's the difference.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
All right, so this, I'm going to start with this one here. I'm going to start with the boat guy. We're going to... Let's see how we're going to do this one. Okay. A Florida man was caught on surveillance taking a deuce while trying to rob a boat. 75-year-old Florida man. So, Kane, this goes right into what you were saying, that old people are not innocent.
Yeah, that's
75.
Is he taking him one or is he leaving one? Because I think it's more accurate.
Yeah, why do people say he's taking a deuce?
Right.
Or
he's definitely leaving it.
Yeah. So he is caught doing the do while attempting to rob a boat. It was a 75-year-old Florida man. He went through a docked boat. Didn't take anything. Michael Wiersbicki Sr. was captured on surveillance video while attempting to rob a boat in the early morning hours of Sunday, September 17th. He was in Punta Gorda. Police department. The boat's owner was asleep. It was at the park marina. Officers were informed by the victim that an elderly man was on the boat. Security cameras going through his stuff, and he deuced right on the boat. They arrested him. They finally got him, but he deuced right there on the boat. He left a deuce. He didn't take anything. Okay, here we go. Sleepy drug dealer caught with fentanyl in an unusual spot. Okay, so this woman, Katrina Workman, stashed a bag of fentanyl in her backside, her jail wallet. She was arrested Tuesday, charged with 3 counts of possession of a controlled substance without a prescription, 1 count of possession of methamphetamine, 1 count of introducing a controlled substance. She had a lot of charges. Here's my thing. If like one like little bit of that can kill you, do you really trust a baggie? Right? You're going to... Golly, people. We have our third hour on the way. Don't go anywhere. We have a lot more in store. Stay with us.
I also do believe that the House has passed the threshold for an impeachment inquiry into the conduct of President Biden. Having said that, I want to just address 3 inescapable facts that led me to that conclusion. First, President Biden has indeed spoken falsely about these foreign deals. The Washington Post and other newspapers have noted that some of his past comments are demonstrably untrue. Second, President Biden was the focus of a multi-million dollar influence peddling scheme. And then finally, President Biden may have benefited from millions of dollars as a part of that scheme.
That was Jonathan Turley testifying a little bit earlier in front of the House, because they are having the impeachment inquiry. That's what's taking place. The first inquiry, the first hearing for this in this whole saga. Welcome back to the program. Top of this third hour here on Thursday. I'm Dana Lash, your lovable curmudgeon. You can listen coast to coast. You can watch the simulcast on YouTube, Facebook, and channel 347 DirecTV as well. So this whole thing with this impeachment inquiry, because there's enough stuff there that necessitates one. And the purpose of these inquiries, as I was discussing, you know, earlier, is we're examining evidence without prejudging it. So some of these messages, for instance, you know, the House Ways and Means Committee, they released some new emails today. It looks really bad. It actually particularly implicates CNN, because it shows that some of these connections, you know, to the business dealings that Hunter Biden was traveling all over the world to sell access to the Biden brand, i.e. his dad. And he even said at one point, you know, that his family's brand is his, quote, only asset. I mean, this is stuff that he said, you know, this is my only asset, which is wild. But that's, you know, I mean, he's recognizing this. The question, and I was listening to the chairman of the committee, Congressman Jason Smith, earlier on this, is whether or not he was selling access, or was he selling the illusion of access? And what they're arguing in the House is that it is, you know, really, you know, you're selling access or the illusion, it's selling access. You're not selling the illusion of access. You are selling access. He argued when he was looking at the payments to the Biden family, et cetera, et cetera. You know, he's saying that there's clearly a pattern here, and that, you know, he's profiteering off of this. He's has his son out there doing this stuff. He's profiting off of it, shielding $20 million from foreign sources, et cetera, et cetera. Then there was this email. Let me pull this up. This is an email that was sent that showed the CNN was looking into the Hunter investigation all the way back in 2021, and that they had an email in which Hunter himself suggested his problems would go away when his dad became president. Uh-huh. It was sent within the IRS. It says, Chief and Deputy Chief, I took a call from a CNN producer yesterday who gives me a heads up on things he is working on and allows me the opportunity to comment. He said he gave me the following tidbits. The producer has an email from Hunter saying he expected all of this stuff to go away when his dad becomes president. Doesn't give an exact date, but I mean, it looks obviously it was prior to the election, you know, because he was looking forward to his dad becoming president. I don't know that CNN ever, do you ever recall, Kane, CNN ever reporting on having this?
No.
Interesting. Uh-huh. Interesting. They haven't said anything about it. I find that incredibly interesting. I mean, it's bad. And again, this is what Audio Soundbite 27, Jamie Raskin, this is what Democrats are trying to say. They act like this is, they keep saying that this is just a witch hunt. Well, what they did was a witch hunt. They didn't even have an inquiry. They went right the hell to impeachment. The process for this, you can't claim the party that skipped the inquiry process and impeached a president without any criminal charges or evidence, that's the witch hunt. Going through the inquiry process to determine whether there is evidence to substantiate any criminal charges in impeachment, that is the process. That's not a witch hunt. Jamie Raskin is trying to conflate it. He wants to hide the fact that Democrats politicized this, and he's accusing Republicans of actually doing, I mean, it's goofy. Audio Soundbite 27, listen.
Counts is what Donald Trump wants. As Republican Representative Ken Buck, a Freedom Caucus member, told CNN the other day, President Trump has gone on his social media account and said we should be impeaching President Biden. Kevin McCarthy said we have an impeachment inquiry. You draw the conclusion, directly or indirectly, this impeachment inquiry was a result of President Trump's pressure. So we moved from a Trump-ordered government shutdown to a Trump-ordered impeachment process, and yet back in the reality-based world, the majority sits completely empty-handed with no evidence of any presidential wrongdoing, no smoking gun, no gun, no smoke.
That's the whole purpose of the inquiry. You utter moron. He knows this, though. Kane has this flashback audio because back in 2019, Raskin didn't even think that you needed a House vote to launch an impeachment inquiry. Listen to
this. I was just going to say, there's no formal constitutional or statutory or even House rule for how an impeachment inquiry is to begin. And so it means different things to different people. For a lot of people believe we've been in an impeachment inquiry ever since we started looking into potential high crimes and misdemeanors and the misconduct of the executive branch. Other people think an impeachment inquiry doesn't begin until you actually have articles of impeachment. I would say we are in an impeachment investigation. And as to the results of the investigation, it could lead to articles of impeachment or it could lead to something else.
Interesting.
Why the change of stance?
There was a change. I want to switch gears and talk about this video as the hearing goes on. And let me pull this up because this is, this is crazy. This story that I've seen, the video of this. And let me pull this up because this video that I was looking at here, and I tweeted it out a little bit earlier. It happened in a school. Looks like what, a high school. This is just wild to me. So the reporting on this is weird because it's a boy pretending to be a girl or a girl who wants to be a boy. So the way that it's worded, it looks like it's a dude who is cosplaying as a chick. And what happens, and clearly this was like all set up because there was somebody, it was Hazel Brook School in Oregon. And this dude comes up behind this girl, grabs her, throws her to the floor, and oh my gosh, this is crazy. And then, just beats her. I mean, the video is awful. Well, I mean, you got to see this though, because this is happening in schools. Go ahead and.
There's no audio to this because there's some, cursing. And
yeah,
stuff.
There's some cursing. So the boy who identifies as a girl, grabs this girl by her hair, throws her to the ground, slaps her. Can't throw a punch. I mean, I guess he's cosplaying as a girl well enough to fight like one. And the girl gets up. She's crying. And at the end, she's like, she is sobbing. She was like this. She's like, that guy hit me.
I can't breathe.
Yeah, she's, oh my gosh. The way that it's worded is so, it's a trans identified male. The way that it's, I think people are trying to be very careful in how they word it because there's still a lot of algorithm ridiculousness on Twitter that is taking forever for people to get through, where if you talk about this issue in a certain way, you're like hidden or you could be suspended or something like that. But apparently it's a dude. There's so many of these videos too. There was one in California where a dude who identifies as a girl attacked female students. It was at King High School in Riverside last spring. And they had protests of it. I can't, oh my gosh. But this is apparently a dude. Man, if this was my kid, I would kick the ass of that dude and I would kick the ass of his mom and his dad. I would beat all of their asses in the gym at school in front of the entire student body. I wouldn't grab him by hair. I'm going to punch you with a real fist. That's ridiculous. I'm tired of this stuff. And this is sexual violence. If it's a dude targeting a chick, this is misogynistic violence. And that's what the trans activism is. I wanted to share this with you because I thought this made a lot of sense. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I'm not telling people to agree with one side or agree with something that's not your lifestyle or anything like that. It's not what I'm doing. I also don't think government I think government has a limit in what it can and can't do, because everything, it needs to be on the citizenry and the church. But I'm going to read this because this makes a lot of sense. Oh, but part of it. Someone had said that they were talking about the, not the alphabet community, but like gays and lesbians, how people wanted to, this is kind of true, like in the 90s. When I was growing up, people who were gay, men and women, they weren't demanding that you, there's a huge difference between the gay community in the 90s and the trans community now. Because in the 90s, no one was demanding that you affirm someone else's perception. Do you know what I mean? So I thought this was interesting. This person wrote, you didn't ask people who weren't gay to validate your decisions. And they said that when society looks at being gay as controversial as being left-handed, along comes the trans movement, which not only insists that everybody memorize and call individuals by their pronoun of the day and accept without question the new biological fact that a person born with an XY chromosome is genetically indistinct from a biological female. Now you don't think that mutilating a prepubescent teenager to remove or rearrange their genitals is the actual definition of healthcare. You're no different than Hitler. And he writes, and this is Philip Jackson on Twitter, writes, I suspect a great many other people who aren't gay could not care less what someone does in the privacy of their home or how they dress or what they want to call themselves, or if they're bold enough to wear a dress in public, that's their prerogative too. But it's also my right to stare at them when they do, because Halloween comes only once a year. They had to believe what you want to believe. But the minute someone tells me I have to accept as fact the insanity that a person can actually change genders just because they believe it deeply, you now make it my business, particularly when you threaten my character or livelihood if I dare disagree with you. The trans movement needs to confuse their delusions with the legitimate needs and positions of other communities, because when they stand alone and apart from you, their own positions look ridiculous. They're using gays to stop criticism of their beliefs and elevating themselves by tarnishing you, which means all the progress that gays and lesbians have made is being threatened if this confusion is allowed to go unchallenged. They say that the straight community cannot stop these people from destroying what you have. That's what you have to do. All we can do is encourage you to stand for your own principles and not be drawn into these delusional forays into pseudoscience in the name of being quote unquote tolerant and understanding. I do think that there is something to that. Doesn't it feel like, because the T's lobbed themselves onto all the other alphabet? Actually, it was just LG, right?
Yeah. LG, I mean, you're right. I don't know exactly when B got added, if it was also in the beginning.
Yeah.
But, T's were not part of it for quite a while.
But doesn't it feel like they're trying to hitch their caboose to that train so that they can hitch their wagon to that horse?
And there's
so
been
they can...
pushback, by the way, ever since then.
Yeah. And use that as a way to say, oh, no, we're just, there's a difference there. You're literally threatening to, like, cost someone their job, and you're going after their families if they don't affirm your perception.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So Netflix has a new documentary that I'm so totally going to watch called Encounters, and it features a UFO sighting of a mile-long spaceship spotted by more than 300 people in Texas. What? It was 5 months after Halloween of 2007. More than 300 locals living 80 miles in Southwest and DFW, Kane. I know. They said it was like over 300 feet to 1 mile long. It was a large V-shaped formation. There were orange-red lights. It hovered above campfires, cruised past major highways, sped silently across the horizon. It's going to be featured in this new doc. I'm totally watching it. Just FYI, letting you know. Las Vegas hospitality workers are authorizing a strike against hotels and casinos. A Missouri woman has to fight to prove that she's alive after the U.S. government has declared her dead. It's actually very difficult. That's crazy. And an Ohio man is charged for reporting a fake bear attack to get out of the Kanawha County woods. My friend Jason Rance joins me next. Stick with us.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
Ooh, Philly. Kane and I chose a hometown favorite, The Urge, going to the liquor store, or open all night, as it were, because we feel like this best represents the hunt for bread in Philly. That's what we can see on the videos. If you're watching the simulcast of the nationally syndicated radio show on channel 347 DirecTV, YouTube, Facebook, Always Good Discussions, that's what's happening. Maybe the bread is in liquid form and in a bottle. It could be. Science has done some amazing things. I've seen watermelons grown as cubes and available in supermarkets. So who knows? But the looting, the criminal actions, everything. We had this headline where you have CEOs of major retailers that are saying, look, you guys, this is getting out of hand. And it's not just in a couple of cities anymore. This is so widespread that this is affecting local economies because stores are having to leave. For crying out loud, okay, what was it, Nike in Portland?
Yeah.
They had, that's like their home. Isn't there that Steve Prefontaine and everything? That's like their whole thing. Yeah. They closed forever. Oh my gosh. Joining me right now, my good friend Jason Rantz, who has a book out about this, where he dives into all of this. What's killing America inside the radical left's tragic destruction of our cities? And Jason's from Pacific Northwest. So, I mean, I'm shocked that the Nike store closed. That's an iconic, that was like their headquarters. That's an iconic thing. And to lose that, no one on the left, Jason, has stopped and said, wow, now this might be getting out of control now, finally.
I mean, if anything, they look at this as some corporation that's finally going somewhere else, which was basically how they responded in Seattle, where we closed a very long-standing Nike store.
Oh,
but it was also
gosh.
In Portland. I mean, we're seeing this all across the board. And of course, this week we learned that Target was also closing a number of stores across the United States, some in New York, some in Oregon, and in Washington State. And, you know, you would think that at some point someone might step back and say, things are going in the wrong direction. But of course, they don't seem to think anything is wrong. And that's a big problem. That's frankly, it's why I wrote What's Killing America.
Yeah. And with this too, kind of, I guess, this has been kind of sort of a result of this restorative justice where we've seen these, you know, these prosecutors, and I think even, you know, in LA, and we've seen them in St. Louis and New York, obviously, where they'll even give in Albuquerque, they'll give standing orders. Well, let's not go after these types of misdemeanors. And I know in California, they had a limit, like if it only up to this limit, it's okay. So it's like you're advertising to all these criminals, okay, it's a free for all. If you engage in this kind of behavior, we're going to give you a pass in the name of restorative justice. That I don't think has that worked anywhere to lower crime, Jason, in any city that's tried?
No, certainly not at the level that we're talking about. Now, if we're talking about, let's say, some 16-year-old who steals a Butterfinger from a 7-Eleven, restorative justice is meant for that person. This is someone who can obviously be saved. But when you are going to that same 7-Eleven for that Butterfinger, armed with a handgun, and you're holding people up, and you are, God forbid, shooting that gun, then no, this is not supposed to be for you. And unfortunately, restorative justice advocates they make no difference between both of those cases. They
That's
treat them
point.
Exactly the same. And that does a disservice, not just to the individual victim who maybe we can save, including save from ultimate death, because usually they get into more trouble the farther out that they go into their career here. But we're not serving the community. We're not serving the victims. But a key tenet for the radical left is that they believe that the actual criminals are victims.
Yeah.
That the criminal justice system itself is something that needs to be dismantled because it's a system of oppression, which doesn't actually mean anything.
That's a great point. I'm talking with Jason Rantz, whose new book, What's Killing America? Inside the Radical Left's Tragic Destruction of Our Cities. And that restorative justice, when it was originally conceived and introduced to the public, it was just as you said, like, oh, here's a young individual. They're making their first mistake. You know, maybe they don't have the greatest support structure around them. Let's work and try to get. I mean, I understand the motivation behind that way more than how we see it used today, where if you have repeat offenders who violent criminals. Oh, well, let's just, you know, it's because they keep being taken advantage of by this horrible system. It's so discriminatory towards them. Well, at some point, this repeat offender has to take responsibility for what they're doing. And these crime, I mean, we're having retail leave these cities. I think in San Francisco, I was looking at that. It varies depending on who's reporting it. But the number of businesses that have left, I don't know what that's going to do to their tax base. You know, these cities, Jason, that rely on those tax dollars to help fund, you know, the security and the police. This is really reforming what cities look like. What do cities look like now?
Absolutely. San Francisco, I think, is a perfect example. This was a city that I legitimately think this is a city that cannot be saved at this point. I think it's too far gone. I think that a lot of other cities are at the precipice. and we can pull things back. We can go in the right direction. You just have to know what to look for. Sort of justice on paper sounds great. Harm reduction sounds great. Housing first sounds great. Now, if I were to ask the average person out on the street if they could define any of those terms, not a single person will be able to tell me that. That's a problem, because all of those issues are behind the crises that are facing these cities. You go into any major city, you're going to see homelessness out of control. You're going to run into people who are openly smoking fentanyl or meth, and you're going to see a crime crisis. And yet, weirdly, at the exact same time, the cost of living in those cities is sky high. And for the people who thought that it would just stay in these big cities, let me tell you, this isn't Vegas. The bad policies of San Francisco or New York, Atlanta, Chicago, Seattle, they don't stay there. They spread very quickly. When the radical left told us that they wanted to dismantle systems of oppression, they were being upfront with us. That's the one thing, one credit I will give them. They didn't lie to us. They told us upfront that they wanted to dismantle these systems. Well, they've done that. They've rebuilt. And they've implemented some significant institutional changes that are not just going to go away with the flip of the switch. So number one, you have to understand what it is we're looking for, the why. Why do they believe what they believe? Why are they implementing certain programs? And when you have that information, you can then get to a point where you can start pulling them back. Because right now, I fear that there are a lot of people all across the country, a lot of people who are listening right now, and they say to themselves, yeah, something doesn't feel right. Something's off. We see the crime crisis. We're seeing homelessness out of control, housing crisis. We're seeing our education system go into the trash. But they don't know who's responsible or what's responsible. They can't connect the dots on their own. They need some help. And that's what I'm trying to do with What's Killing America.
We're talking to my friend Jason Rance, a talk radio host himself, his new book, What's Killing America. You brought up a really good point with that in terms of connecting the dots, because for a long time, and I still think that, you know, elections where you have judges on the ballot and, you know, people are looking at attorney general and they're looking at some of these, you know, lesser known, maybe more unattractive. They're not really in the headlines all the time. Well, now they are. But, you know, but at least, you know, 10 years ago, they weren't. And yeah. I think they were sort of forgotten by a lot of voters. And then I also see which I understand the narrative of the Soros backed prosecutors. I do think that that's absolutely true. But we've been getting bad DAs and bad judges for a long time. This is like would you agree that this is sort of the result of a problem that's been decades, not just a decade in the making?
Absolutely. And I would go a step further. It's not even just the judges. It's pretty much any race in which you just don't get a lot of attention, including school board directors, yes, which I think are incredibly important. But you have so many people who either don't do the research, or you've got people who don't have kids who don't really care, and they're not really connecting the dots themselves of, well, those kids who graduate become our next leaders, and they're getting farther and farther to the left. So in cases of judges, I mean, we're seeing these stories every single day. We had one in Washington State recently where a suspect was accused of a pretty significant and long-term series of rape against his minor daughter. And he was released on $10,000 bail. That means he only had to put up $1,000. And he's out there. You've got individuals who are shooting weapons, shooting guns at police officers, and they're being released on their own personal recognizance. We have a cashless bail system, whether we're talking about Illinois or New York, where it's codified into law, or in places like Washington and California, which effectively just have judges who have that discretion and they're able to do whatever it is they want. How often in any media reports do you know the name of a judge? How often do they tell you that? Almost never. And so for me personally, when I'm covering these stories on my radio show or in any of my work online, I go out of my way. I'm going to make sure you know who this judge is. You should know. They are in Washington State. All of our judges are elected. Some are appointed when some step down, but they're elected positions. And it's absolutely insane what's been going on, but no one knows. No one's following it.
That's such a great point. That's a very good point. Well, this is, I think, a very, like, such a timely book, obviously. What's Killing America? Inside the Radical Left's Tragic Destruction of Our Cities. And as you were saying, you know, just kind of last thoughts on this, you know, with cities like San Francisco, you said, which I acknowledge it, but I don't think I've ever heard anybody verbalize it just like that, that you're giving up on, like, San Francisco. So if San Francisco has failed at this point, what's the next city that's getting ready to fall over that cliff?
I think there are lots you could put on that list. I think Portland and Seattle, I think Chicago, Atlanta are always at the top of the list. It doesn't mean that they're going to fail. It means they're clearly on the wrong path and they are quickly failing. And so unless people get in the way of that failure, it's just going to continue to go. It's going to snowball like what's happening in San Francisco, where all of a sudden people are leaving, businesses are leaving, and lots of people are suffering. Mm-hmm. And the unfortunate reality, there are a lot of people on the ground who want to pretend nothing is wrong whatsoever. They want to just completely gaslight us, and they're doing it to their own detriment.
Yeah, they are. It's sowing chaos and like in some ways legalizing it by not enforcing the law against it. Jason Rantz, the book is What's Killing America? Inside the Radical Left's Tragic Destruction of Our Cities. And you can listen to Jason's radio show as well. And, of course, his hometown in Seattle there. Jason, thank you so much for what you do. Good to see you on Fox as well. Good to talk with you.
Thanks. Good to see you.
Of course. Take care. We have more to come, folks, as we wrap up this third hour of our broadcast. Yeah, San Francisco. It's like something I think we've all thought of, but that's the first time anybody's ever said it, I think. It's too far gone. Too far gone. The last time I was in San Francisco was, gosh, maybe 15 years ago, actually. 15 or 16 years ago. And it was kind of sketch even then, you know, with drug addicts and stuff like that. And I remember I was in a nice hotel and walking out of the hotel and there was literally like a homeless person who had urinated on themselves. And that was like the first time I ever saw like out in the wild, a drug syringe, you know, right next to someone. I'm like, oh my gosh. And it was like across the street was a Starbucks. I mean, it was just that. And no one else was like really paying attention to it. With me, it was like seeing a two-headed calf. I'm like, oh my gosh. That's wild.
Looking for the drive-through version of the Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from the Dana Show.
I wake up every day optimistic. I'd say, put your money on me. We're going to get this done. Now,
I'm not counting you out. That's one thing people say. Like, that's one thing people say. Don't count you out. But I'm just talking about whether you're able to wrangle those crazy cats on both crazy cats. That sounds like a beatnik, but those crazy wrangling cats that you're trying to accomplish. What are the chances that finally happens? I don't know.
If you want to do it by a clock, I don't know what to give you the odds on a clock. But if you want to gauge at the end of the day, do we get this done?
Yeah. Well, I don't think that we need to get anything done that includes. Whether it's, you know, billions for Ukraine, and Tim Scott can sit here and go, oh, they're going to pay it back, I promise, as much as he wants to, but nobody believes that. As long as it includes anything like that, no. No thanks. We're not buying it. We don't believe it. And with this, the shutdown is supposed to be 12:01 Saturday night, 12:01 a.m. Sunday morning, technically, but you know what I mean. And whether they, I don't know, they can get it or not. There are some Republicans that are trying to save themselves with this. You need to be concerned about saving the American people. Not, if you do the right thing, voters are going to support you. You're not going to be punished by your base for doing the right thing and being responsible, a responsible steward of their money. This is not going to happen. So stop being afraid of doing the right thing. The end. Do you see what Fetterman did? I don't feel bad for him. I don't like him, and I still think he's a buffoon, and I think that he does cosplay as the everyman, even though I do think that he feels bad about himself. I saw this on Twitchy. He was trying to pull a stunt. He got a case of Bud Light, and this is so cringe. He got a case of Bud Light. He tweeted, "This morning I directed my staff to deliver a gift to congratulate and salute Representative Comer and his Team America squad as they embark on the historic impeachment journey." And it had a note that said, "To Rep Comer and his squad, a profile in courage can make a guy thirsty. Congratulations, this Bud's for you." And it's a case of Bud Light. And, okay. You're going to give them crap beer. And how did he think that this is just stupid? What is this supposed to, like, you like Bud Light, so why would you give him something that you like?
I see that, and I think he's admitting Dylan Mulvaney's a man.
Oh, really?
Because he's like, well, it makes a man thirsty. So it's a little, some Bud Light, right? So
maybe.
Who knows?
It's cringe to me. I don't know why he thought that. Ugh.
He's inches deep in miles wide.
Stop it. Just so, nah. I don't know. This is bad. Yeah, that, to me, you really showed them. Whoa. Wow, what a put down. Whoa. No. Mm-mm. No, that's not how it works. You didn't have that up, did you? Oh, did it? Yeah. Oh, you know what? Here. I'll fix that right now. It's my birthday.
Finish him.
There it is. That was every single time that, you know, Vivek spoke. I was just...
Finish him.
Just shut up, dude. Turn your mic off. I said earlier, someone was like, Eugene Levy, I don't get it. Google what? Eugene Levy and look at his eyebrows.
Yeah.
I said that the last night's debate was just a giant, elaborate sting organization to make Doug Burgum give back Eugene Levy's eyebrows. That's all I said. All right. Today's stupidity came.
All right. This hearing going on for the impeachment inquiry. Jasmine Crockett is a Democrat. She was screaming.
Oh my gosh,
about
the accessories.
The only thing she thinks Biden is guilty of. Let's hear this.
But I will tell you what the president has been guilty of. He has unfortunately been guilty of loving his child unconditionally, and that is the only evidence that they have brought forward.
These moves are as transparent as the glue on her fake lashes. Stop it.
But I mean, that talking point went out. That talking point went out. It's literally all they've been doing in this hearing is talking about
how
Biden...
He loves his dead gay son!
He's only guilty of loving his son unconditionally.
He loves his son! What's wrong with you people? I didn't even get to do the Aztec death whistle, but we'll do that tomorrow. We'll save that as a Friday treat. There you go. Folks, have a great night. Go subscribe over to Substack, Chapter and Verse. I'll be back behind the mic with you tomorrow. Thanks for the happy birthday wishes.